Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Regional Roundup with Leslie Lopez, regional correspondent with the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, you're in the breakfast huddle with Elliot Danker and Manisha Tank. Ryan will be back with some finance headlines just after half past the hour.
That time of the week where we get the latest from around Southeast Asia, helping us out as always, Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez. Leslie, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Hi, Manisha. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you, Leslie. You sound like you're multitasking this morning. There's sort of noises going on in the
yes,
background. Okay, well, let's get your focused attention just for a short while and talk about what's been happening in recent days in Malaysia. The opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim has come under scrutiny. This is after he didn't force a block vote against Budget 2021 to shake up Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin's administration. So it means that Budget 2021's second reading was secured after only 13 opposition MPs stood to call for a division.
So, Leslie, why did Anwar back away from calling for a bloc vote? And has this decision hurt his popularity?
Well, you know, Anwar is claiming that the Muhyiddin government gave in to, at the last minute, to some of the concessions, the demands by the opposition, from the opposition. And that led him to, you know, kind of stand down, not call for a bloc vote. But, you know, that whole move, that whole entire episode really has hit his political prestige. You know, the optics on the move hasn't been good for him politically. But we've been talking to insiders who say that Anwar is not too concerned about public sentiment at this point. Pushing ahead, he's pushing ahead with his plan to, you know, secure the majority of elected MPs to try and control our government. The confidence, however, isn't shared by a large number of Malaysians. But, you know, I think increasingly people are beginning to wonder that this whole paralysis can only be resolved with fresh elections, you know.
Right. I think you can't talk about Anwar without talking about Dr. M. Mm. So you have former Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad back in the news, and all this after Senior Minister for Economy Azmin Ali claimed that Dr. Mahathir was behind the move in February to form this new Perikatan Nasional coalition with Malay parties.
Yeah, he's not interested in the word retirement at all, is he? Dr. M has denied this, hasn't he, Leslie? But can you tell us a little bit more about this accusation and the timing of it?
Well, you see, the thing is that clearly, you know, timing, I believe Dr. M is trying to get back in the news, trying to be, you know, kind of relevant. He's really been marginalized today with a very, very small number of supporters. He probably has only, like, you know, three or four of the members of parliament together with him. So clearly here's a man who, you know, at one point dominated Malaysian politics. Today is very much sidelined, and he's trying to gain some kind of traction. But from our reporting, actually, on this matter, these accusations of, you know, that he wanted to set up this Malay Party, there's truth on both sides between Azmin and him. Clearly, Dr. Mahathir wanted to have a unity government at one point. And his idea was for Bersatu to lead that unity government, but it also entailed UMNO being declared illegal. Mm. And that would have allowed for more UMNO members without a party to actually come into Bersatu. But that plan didn't work out. And hence, the split between Muhyiddin and Dr. Mahathir and also Azmin too. So I think here, clearly these politicians are trying to maybe rewrite the narrative on what really happened. But that is what really happened, actually, at this point in time.
Gosh, it never stops, does it?
It never stops. It never really stops.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're keeping you on your toes, Leslie. I love it. So let's shift gear just a little bit. So at the beginning of this pandemic, I'm not sure that many people around the world had heard of Top Glove, but now everyone has for all sorts of different reasons. Malaysia's Ministry of Human Resources, Labour Department, has actually opened an investigation into the company, which is the world's biggest glove manufacturer, finding that the firm did not comply with standards for worker accommodation.
So, Leslie, as of Monday, you've got over 3,400 top glove workers tested positive for COVID-19. Apart from the obvious financial impact it's going to have on the company, what else should we make of this? Perhaps a warning for other manufacturers?
Well, I think clearly it is a warning. And, you know, there has been an adverse impact, immediate, certainly for Top Glove, because the share price took a slight beating. But I think this will be temporary.
Right.
You know, Top Glove represents one of the few bright sparks in an otherwise troubled economy. And I think basically both sides, I think Top Glove will make whatever concessions that the government is seeking, and the government too will I believe go easy on them in, to some extent, and find some kind of middle ground for this company, which remains to be today at least one of the few bright sparks in the Malaysian economy.
Okay.
So compromise will be reached. Yeah.
Okay. Let's turn our attention now to Thailand, where yesterday in the news we saw Thailand's constitutional court warning against vulgar criticism of its rulings. Today is a big day for them.
Yeah, that's right. There's a crucial judgment coming down on whether Thailand's Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha has broken rules by living in an army house. Now, if he's found guilty, it could see him forced out of office. Obviously, there's momentum on the ground for his removal because there have been these months, right, of street protests. But what are you hearing about the case?
Well, you know, the thing is that the court ruling can go either way. From what we hear, no matter what happens, judgment, I don't think it's going to immediately impact his position at this point. But on the ground, at the streets, I think these the protesters are emboldened. I think cases against them is not going to change sentiment, actually, which is particularly at this point rising against the establishment. So these protesters, I think, have believed that they've got the upper hand and they're not going to stop. You know, we're going to see some very emboldened group of people taking to the streets.
Can I just ask, Leslie, in terms of how widespread these protests have been, obviously we see these pictures regularly. We see them on the front page of the Straits Times as well, of huge numbers of people protesting in places like Bangkok. But has this been consistent across Thailand?
Well, no, it certainly is not. You know, but it focuses on Bangkok, and I think it is critical here because, you know, Bangkok represents almost like, I don't know, more than 50% of the Thai economy. So whatever happens in Bangkok really sends huge shockwaves nationwide. So that is why people watch what's happening in Bangkok. So it is crucial. And for people to, you know, for them to, whatever happens there, it has ramifications, it has implications for the whole country.
Leslie, to wrap up, we head over to the Philippines, where the government says it's looking at subsidizing coronavirus tests for tourists. I mean, they're looking at like as much as half the costs of swab tests for tourists. How far does this go in terms of getting tourists back to the country? First, you've got to be able to travel to begin with, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think here you have a government that really is desperately trying to get the economy back on track. And tourism is key for Philippines, getting the Chinese tourists back to start coming back to the country, especially ahead of the festive season now. And so I think, you know, really, this is, whether it gets there, I have serious doubts, actually. Until a vaccine is found, until people are, you know, allowed to travel, these are all noises that governments make and hoping to, you know, talk up the economy. I don't think this is really going to go very far.
I tell you what, Leslie, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a personal curveball very quickly if you can. Obviously, you know, we can't travel around the region, but that would be a core part of what you do. When things eventually open up, where is the first place you would want to go in Southeast Asia, story-wise?
Story-wise, I think I would want to go to Indonesia and probably go to Sulawesi, actually. I mean, the killings there are troubling, and I think, you know, somebody needs to find out what really is going on. You know, and I would like to find out really what's going on, because militism, Islamic radicalism, and these religious kind of conflicts are going to be crucial in Indonesia. So I would like to go there, actually.
And therein lies why we rely on you, Leslie, for your enthusiasm for the region.
Personal-wise, he's supposed to come to Singapore because our beer session is 8 months overdue.
Yes, yes, yes. I'll certainly do that before I head to Jakarta.
We've been speaking with Straits Times regional correspondent Leslie Lopez. Leslie, as always, thank you for your time. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.